cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged sky, and up a cloud he draw.
This is Dan Kinler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona with Western Short Stories. Today we are reading from The Humor of the American Cowboy by Stan Hoig. This is a Bison book that was published in 1958 by the University of Nebraska Press in Lincoln. I remind you that our stories may be edited for recording. Our first story is entitled The Quick and the Dead, and it starts with a quote from Emerson Hough's book, The Story of the Cowboy. "Dear sir, we have brand 800 calves this roundup. We've made some hay, potatoes is a fair crop. That feller you left in charge at the other camp got to fresh, and we had to shoot him. Nothing much has happened since you left. Yours truly, Jim." The Wild West settled her social problems in some very special ways, which included six-shooter law, bullet battles, vigilante raids, and necktie parties. None of these methods evidenced any great amount of tact or diplomacy, but they were pretty effective in clearing away misunderstandings. The Old West was a place of sudden violence, where the strong conquered, and to be strong generally meant to be quick and sure with a six-gun. Accordingly, the men of the West developed great respect for swiftness of the gun hand. They also possessed an extremely realistic attitude toward death. That final shuffling off of the coils was altogether too present in the cowboy's existence to grieve long about. It had to be accepted as philosophically as it was possible to do so, in the attitude that the inevitable merely came sooner than it might have. A cowboy who had lost out in a six-shooter argument was being buried by his friends. After the sod had been heaved upon the box, someone sort of felt a few words order be said. A Church of England prayer book was produced by a rancher's wife, and someone read out the verse about the quick and the dead. As he turned sadly from the grave, one puncher shook his head to another. "Old Bill wasn't very quick," he observed, "but he sure is dead." This same acceptance of death is found in the lines penned by a sagebrush scribe. "When men lived raw in the desert maw, and hell was nothing to shun, where they buried 'em neat without preacher or sheet, and writ on their headboards crude but sweet, this Jasper was slow with a gun." In her Between Sun and Sod, Willie Newberry Lewis tells of an old Dutchman rancher whose wife had died. The Dutchman was very sad, and, wishing to pay tribute to the woman who had shared his life and troubles, commented in typically Western laconic style, "Doc, it would have been easier for me to give up my last span of mules than that old woman." On another occasion, a local no-good was caught cheating in a poker game and was promptly shot to death by one of his fellow participants. The fellow was married, and it was agreed that someone should notify his wife. Of course, no one wanted the chore, so the matter was decided by drawing cards. The loser was a gambler. Reluctantly, with hat in hand, he knocked on the door of the victim's shack, and a big, straggly-haired female answered the door. The gambler asked to see Widow Yates.
"Widder Yates? My name is Yates, but I ain't no widder."
"Lady," the gambler said,
"I've $20 that says you are."
In Virginia City, an outlaw named Boone Helm was about to be hanged. Beside him writhed a member of his outlaw gang.
"Kick away, old fella," said Boone. "I'll be in Hades with you in a jiffy. Every man for his principles. Hurrah for Jeff Davis. Let her go, men.
And Black Jack Ketchum had this comment to make as he was about to be hanged at Clayton, New Mexico. Can't you hurry this up a bit? Ah, here, they eat dinner in Hades at 12 sharp. I don't aim to be late. A Mr. George Shears approached the gallows with this comment. Gentlemen, I'm not used to this business, having never been hung before. Do I jump off or slide off? There is a story of a certain lame Johnny whose only claim to immortality was a mouth big enough to plop a cantaloupe into. Lame Johnny made the mistake of stealing a horse, was caught, and toted off to Boot Hill. Someone in the group felt that even a horse thief should have an epitaph, and finally one grizzled old cowman came up with this. Lame Johnny, stranger, pass gently over this sod. If he opens his mouth, you're gone, by God. Flyspeck Bill, horse thief and murderer, was introduced to a vigilante's rope one bitterly cold winter night. The committee, fearing trouble with the law, was at the coroner's the next morning and asked if he would be so kind as to square things when he made his report. Well, I don't know, boys, the coroner replied. Did you leave Bill hanging there in that tree all night? Yup. That being the case, said the coroner, old Bill sure would have frozen to death if he hadn't got his neck busted. I reckon I'll just have to report he died from overexposure. Another coroner performed assessment work on the remains of a badly shot up gentleman and found that the body was rich in lead, but too badly punctured to hold whiskey. Other outstanding verdicts by coroners are, came to his death from emphysema of the lungs, which might have been, and probably was, caused by strangulation, self-inflicted, or otherwise. Came to his death by suicide. He tried to shoot to death at the distance of 150 yards, a man armed with a Winchester rifle. And upon finding the bones of a dead Mexican, Judge Bean noted the bullet hole in the center of the forehead and declared that this gent met his death at the hands of a doggone good pistol shot. A cowboy once made the mistake of arguing with a trapper over whether wildcats had long tails or not. The trapper settled the argument by furnishing as his proof a Colt 45 revolver. The coroner's decision was that any hombre who was crazy enough to call a long-haired, whiskey-drinking trapper a liar had, in a strong sense, died of ignorance. One braggart cowboy loved to flash his gun by twirling it by the trigger guard, a practice which resulted in the accidental death of two people. One night, the man disappeared and was next seen hanging from a cottonwood limb with a note from the vigilantes. This is no accident. Another undesirable was found in a similar position. His placard read, in some ways, this is a very bad man. In other ways, he's a heck of a lot worse. A railroad bridge once collapsed near Langtree, Texas, killing 7 men who were working on it and seriously injuring 3 others. When Judge Bean arrived on the scene, all 10 were laid out in a row, and he pronounced them all dead. But, Judge, objected a member of the coroner's jury, 3 of them fellers ain't dead yet. They're close enough to it, replied the judge. 15 miles out here and 15 miles back is too far to ride just to hold another inquest. Them fellers is dead, legally. One of the victims spent 3 days of unlawful living before he died in favor of the judge's decision. While there were actually few lilies among the cowboy breed, there is a distinction to be made between the real and the false tough ones. Some cowboys tried to put on a big show for tenderfeet, and some even learned stereotyped Western brags that would impress the uninitiated. The recital would go something like this. I'm the baddest of the bad men from Bitter Creek.
I sleep in a den of live rattlesnakes, and I live on the blood of mountain lions. The farther up Bitter Creek you goes, the meaner people gets, and I live at the headwaters."
Similar to this is the story of the man who arrived in Arkansas driving a two-wheeled cart, which was drawn by a pair of mountain lions. The man was unkempt and bearded, wore two big six-shooters around his waist, and had a bowie knife stuck in his belt. On the seat beside him rode a snarling wildcat, and for a whip, the stranger used a live rattlesnake. After he had ordered and drunk a gallon of sulfuric acid, this woolly hombre was asked to tell where he came from.
"Oklahoma," he said, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. "Things getting so bad in there that all us sissies are having to get out."
But the West did not care for braggarts, as is evident in the cowboy's humor of story and ballad. One yarn, for instance, tells of the waddy who decided to show off his toughness. Buckling on his hardware, he downed some brave maker and started out. First he raced his horse up and down the street, firing off his gun and yelling. Then he swaggered into the saloon, chanting a boast which he had memorized. He shouted, "I'll wear 45s on both hips and carry a 44 just for to pick my teeth. I use a cactus for a pillar, and I'm a bad man to monkey with. I'm a wild and woolly wolf." About that time, the marshal, who had been sitting quietly to one side, came up and said, "So, you're a wolf, huh?"
"That's right, a wolf."
The marshal drew himself up and looked the other square in the eye. "Just what sort of wolf are you?"
Said the waddy, "I'm just a little old coyote."
In his book Cowboy Lingo, Ramon F. Adams records this classic description of a would-be bad man. "This old catawampus comes racking to town and orates as how he's got more troubles than a rat-tailed hoss tied short in fly time. He proceeds to guzzle snake pison and hell round town until he's knocking about like a blind dog in a meat shop. He tries to make it appear he's tough as tripe and lets out a yell that'd drive a wolf to suicide. He's standing on the high gallery of the Silver Spur Saloon when the city marshal swoops down on him like 40 hen hawks on a setting quail. And he pronto gets as harmless as a pet rabbit. He starts to bowin' and bendin' to the law like a pig over a nut, but he loses his balance and falls down the steps, bounding long like a barrel downhill. When he hits bottom, he begins feeling over his carcass for broken bones, and when he don't find none, he heaves such a sigh you could feel the draft. But he is considerable sobered. I never laughed so much since I wore three-cornered pants." Also, there is told the story of the bad man who invaded a cow town with talk of how he was going to shoot up a certain Vic Smith, famous gunman of the northwestern range areas. His barroom audience listened to him without comment. Then someone stuck his head in the door and called them a "hello," whereupon one of the cowboys called back, "Well, hello, Vic Smith. We was just talking about you." "Vic Smith," the stranger howled. "My God, I thought he was in Wyoming." And he disappeared through a window. In the frontier ballad, Buckskin Joe, another braggart by the name of Hanky Dean takes great pains to recite his reputation to a mild little fellow with whom he is playing cards.
"Look here, little stranger, do you know who I am?"
"Yes, and I don't care a copper-colored damn."
The dealers stopped their dealing, and the players held their breath, for words like those to Hanky were a sudden flirt with death. Then Hanky describes to the little man how rattlesnakes have bitten him and crawled off to die, and then he tells of his exploit of cleaning out a den of mountain lions.
But the little stranger's only reply is to pull out his life preserver and shoot out the spots of the five of spades. Then Hanky stepped up to the stranger and made a neat apology. Why, the lions in the mountains? That was nothing but a joke. Never mind about the extra. You are a bad shooting man, and I'm a meek little child and as harmless as a lamb. A Texas cowboy was asked how many Indians he had killed. He answered that perhaps he had killed one, and when pressed for the gruesome details, explained that once some Indians had been chasing him, and that he was practically certain one had become overheated and died of a bad cold. Not all of the woolly ones, however, were so modest. John Wesley Hardin bet a glass of beer that he could make a man jump 10 feet by shooting close to him. He did, and he won the beer. Clay Allison, of New Mexico, went to a dentist to get a tooth pulled. The dentist pulled the wrong tooth, whereupon Clay went back, hit the dentist over the head with the butt of his revolver, and drew 6 teeth in revenge. A cowboy rode into a Tuscosa, Texas dance hall and proceeded to shoot the place up. Then he rode out the back door and around again to the front. This time the proprietor was waiting for him with a shotgun. "You'll pass here only over my dead body," announced the dance hall owner. "That's easy," agreed the cowboy, and shot him dead. Pharaoh Nell had just shot a man in a saloon quarrel. Then, for good measure, she ran the bartender out of the saloon. All this accomplished, she towed the corpse and made a statement for her public. "All is new. I's gonna have trouble with this coyote," said she. "Just look at the shape of his head." A cowboy had rented a hotel room and, because of crowded conditions, was forced to share it with another guest. It turned out to be a big, fat man who came into the room and started to undress. The cowboy remarked that he was subject to fits and liable to have one at any time and hoped that he would not be a bother. Actually, he was wishing, of course, that the big man would decide to get another room. Instead, the other tucked his 6-gun carefully under his pillow and said, "That's all right. I've got a sure cure for fits." He went to sleep, and so did the cowboy, who wasn't bothered by a single fit all night. Another bewhiskered Westerner approached a friend and asked, "Didn't you tell me that Pete Adams called me a hot-headed, overbearing son of a gun?" "No, I never said that." "Doggone! I gone and killed an innocent man." Naturally, there were a good many young boys who were enraptured by the tales of renowned gunmen and Western heroes. Such a person is the hero of a cowboy song called The Lavender Cowboy. He was only a lavender cowboy. The hairs on his chest were two. He wanted to follow the heroes, to do as the he-men do. But he was inwardly troubled by dreams that gave him no rest. When he heard of the heroes in action, he wanted more hairs on his chest. Herbicide and many hair tonics he rubbed in morning and night. But when he looked into the mirror, no new hairs grew in sight. He battled for Red Nellie's honor and cleaned out a hold-up nest. He died with his 6-gun a-smoking, but only 2 hairs on his chest. And that concludes The Quick and the Dead. Now we will read Pilgrims. Starts with a quote. "When he meets a greener, he ain't afraid to rig, stands him on a chuck box, and makes him dance a jig." To the cowboys of the 19th century, there had never been a more humorous creature conceived than the tenderfoot who wandered guilelessly into the West. Formally educated usually, yet completely ignorant of Western ways, the tenderfoot was a ripe target for cowboy humor. Partly in defense against Eastern arrogance, and partly out of just plain orneriness, The cowboy immediately and wholeheartedly adopted the greenhorn as his favorite play toy. No single subject provided him with more hilarious mirth, and none received more undivided attention. Especially the maker must have had tongue-in-cheek when he first put into an Englishman's head the idea of investing in American cattle. There were undoubtedly few planets in the heavens which could have provided a being less congruous to the West. The Englishman's speech, his manners, his attitudes, his humors were almost opposite to those of the cowboy world. And yet, credit to both the cowboy and the Englishman, many of them molded themselves with British persistency into the pattern and became real folks of the cow country. A favorite joke concerning the English cousins was about the monocled gentleman who was visiting his first Western ranch. When taken on a tour of the ranch, he was amazed at the size of it, but more so at the number of cattle which were upon it. "By Jove," he explained, "and where do you find milkmaids for all of them?" Another is of the Englishman, whom two cowboys found starving for water on the edge of a flowing creek. The creek was surrounded on both sides by arid wasteland, and the day was a hot one. As they approached, the Englishman ran toward them waving his arms wildly. His tongue was so badly parched he could hardly talk. "My word," he managed to gasp, "have either of you good fellows a tin cup about you?" One of the most amusing stories concerning Englishmen is told by Willie Newbery Lewis in Between Sun and Sod. Newly arrived in the West was a young Englishman whose brother was a big rancher in the Texas Panhandle. This young man, it was soon discovered, prided himself on what the cowboys called high-soundin' oratory. The boy, Vincent by name, began to take an interest in the ranch. One day, he discovered that a nester had squatted on a part of his brother's finest land, and he was appalled at such a lack of respect for the law. No one seemed overly concerned about the matter, but the more Vincent meditated, the more certain he was that a serious crime was being committed, and that only ignorance could prompt such a deed. He decided, therefore, to take the matter into his own hands. All that night, he worked very hard, preparing a speech with which he could explain the matter to the nester, even keeping others awake to practice his creation upon them. The next morning, red-eyed but confident, Vincent rode for the nester's shack. The cowboys of the ranch watched him start away with some misgivings, but they decided that this was Vincent's play, and it was not for them to interfere. Vincent found the nester at home and respectfully but firmly delivered his speech, saying in effect, "You can't do this thing. The land is ours by law, and if you willfully appropriate it for your personal use, you will be taking that to which you have no right, and in doing so, you will be desecrating every principle for which our ancestors fought and bled." Having spoken, Vincent touched his quirt to his horse and rode proudly off. Next day, the cowboys of the ranch were more than surprised to discover that the nester had moved. It remained a mystery until one day one of the cowboys ran across the man and inquired as to why he had moved without putting up a fight. When asked by the others what reason the nester had given, the cowboy answered, "Oh, he didn't give much reason at all. He said that if Vincent's pappy had fought and bled over that piece of land, he kind of figured the kid ought to have it." The tenderfoot's gullibility was a red flag to the imaginative cowboy, and to him it was generally a matter of art to see just how long he could string the greener. One old poke was guiding a city-bred group on a camping trip, and, upon passing a lake which had dried while others were full, was asked by a lady to explain the phenomenon. "Lady," he said, "last year a party of Dutchmen camped and fished here, caught a lot of fish. They brought plenty of grub along, also beer, and a barrel of pretzels. When they left, they found they had almost a half a barrel of pretzels, and not wanting to haul them away, they dumped them in the lake. That's why this here lake is dry.
I don't see why.
Ma'am, the cowboy explained patiently, the fish ate them pretzels and got so thirsty that they drank up all the water.
An Eastern lady once inquired of a cowboy guide as to what made him walk so bow-legged.
Lady, said Joe solemnly, I've been sitting astraddle a horse so long that my two legs are practically strangers to each other. When I start to walk, my two legs keep saying to each other, you let me by this time, and I'll let you by next time.
One of the old favorite pranks to pull on unsuspecting pilgrims was the badger fight. The cowboy, by fostering little remarks here and there, would create an air of mystery that would cause the newcomer to itch to know what was going on. Presently he would be told, badger fight, ever see one? Of course he hadn't, and the cowboys would take him into their confidence and allow him to watch one that night, provided, of course, that he said nothing about it. Otherwise, they might all end up in the Juzgado. A couple of the boys would round up a fierce-looking dog, and everything would be made ready at some stable or barn. The badger, which was supposedly kept half-starved under a box, would have to be freed by someone who would upset the box. This privilege was always given to the tenderfoot. When the time came, the wide-eyed and excited goat would give a hearty yank on the rope that disappeared under the box, and out would come a nice, white bedroom pot. Then the drinks were on the initiated greenhorn. A favorite joke concerning the ignorance of the Easterner toward the West is about a young fellow who came to New Mexico to regain his failing health. The boy applied for a job with a sheep herder, saying that while he wasn't much of a rider, he was pretty fast on his feet. He claimed to have been quite a runner in college. The sheepherder ordinarily wouldn't have hired him, but he was planning a trip and needed someone to tend his flocks while he was gone. He told the boy that in sheepherding, horses were not used, since it was easier to keep them from straying on foot. He hired the tenderfoot, but cautioned him emphatically not to let the sheep stray, for he couldn't afford to lose any. The young man promised faithfully. The sheep rancher made his trip, and, upon returning 6 weeks later, found his hired hand looking well and happy and more robust than ever. When asked how the sheep and he had gotten along, the boy replied that the old sheep had acted all right, but that the lambs had been unruly. He'd been compelled to tie them up to keep them from straying. The sheepman was amazed, for the lambs were the least likely to stray. He went around behind the corral to see the wayward lambs, and beheld a sight which staggered him. Tethered out there were nearly 50 big jackrabbits. The boy had mistaken them for lambs. One autumn afternoon, several cowboys were sitting on their horses idly watching the passengers alight from a delayed, eastbound train. Among them was a college undergraduate, sunny-faced, who inquired the result of a big football game played the previous day, and then began to pace up and down the platform. Presently, someone from a westbound train called,
"Hello, Jim! Congratulations! You beat us yesterday 10-0.
The undergraduate emitted an impulsive cry of joy and danced down the platform. He suddenly stopped, for bedlam had begun. Seven cowboys were yelling and shooting from the backs of horses that, no longer sleepy, were plunging and snorting and rushing about. The undergraduate's train started, and he climbed aboard it. The punchers and their horses relapsed into quietude. A woman from the westbound train asked the cowboys what they had been celebrating and received the answer, "We don't know, ma'am. A nice-looking young feller was on that other train, heard something that pleased him, and took a contract to deliver a lot of noise. He didn't have much time, so us boys tried to help him out.
One of the standard old jokes of the West is that of the Englishman who bought a herd of cattle from a cattleman and was unaware of the fact that the rancher was reselling cows which were being trotted round a small mountain and run through the counting posts several times. In the herd was an old yellow steer, bob-tailed and lop-horned, and with a game leg. On the 15th time through for the old steer, the Englishman screwed his eyeglass tighter to his eye and said, "There are more bloody, blarsted, lop-horned, bob-tailed, yellow, crippled brutes than anything else, it seems." During the early phases of immigration into the West, the number of new arrivals was so few as not to cause the cowboy any great worry. He could eventually indoctrinate these men with the customs of the country, or, if the outsider refused to fit, make his stay unpleasant enough to require his moving on. But, eventually, the flow of outsiders into the cattle domain, prompted by the government's wholesale opening of grazing lands to settlement, began to cause him real concern. He saw the open ranges being chewed up by the plow, fences cutting across the old trails, and Eastern culture rapidly strangling out his way of life. But the cowboy's humor, which had never failed him through hard times, did not fail him now. In Partner of the Wind, Jack Thorpe lets a cowboy tell how he felt. "I'm just about as lonesome with this bunch of newcomers as old Slabs Tyson said the cowpuncher was who died and went to heaven. When he got there, all the men folks had dress suits on, their vests cut way down to their waistband, and tails of their coats most to their heels. All the women had on lace clothes, and not much of them. Well, the old puncher was just rigged out regular, and those high-toned folks turned their noses up at him and wouldn't speak. This went on for some time, till at last one day he saw St. Peter and asked as a special favor if he couldn't get a pass to go down to hell for a few days and see some of the boys, as there wasn't anybody where he was that he was acquainted with. As he'd behaved pretty well, St. Peter gave him a round-trip ticket good for a week, and off he goes. Well, the very first person he met after he arrived was an old cowpuncher from his hometown, who takes and leads him around and shows him the sights. Presently, they come to an old barn, and going in there, they see about 1,000 people all setting around. They had candles stuck in old bottles, and all of them was a-playing poker. Some of them the puncher did know, and some he didn't. Pretty soon, the old feeling come over him, and he just got to itching to horn in, especially when he seen what little some of them did know about the national game. As he didn't have any money, and all the boys he knew seemed about broke, he was in a terrible fix. But at last, after gunning round among the different players, he noticed a feller that was dressed up fit to kill, and seemed kind of out of place in that bunch, though he sure had a swell stack of chips in front of him. The puncher got to talking to the dude, and told about getting a ticket from St. Peter, good for a week, and after that he'd have to return to heaven. One word brought on another, till at last he swapped his return ticket to heaven for the dude's pile of chips, saying he'd rather live in hell with a bunch of punchers than in heaven with them damned high-toned dudes. While the heavenly cowboys might have been content to edge down the bench a ways from greenhorns, there was one old New Mexico bar dog, a stove-up former cowpuncher, who wasn't quite so congenial about the matter. Several young punchers rode their horses into his saloon one night and proceeded to wreck the place. During the fracas, an overdressed drummer from the east got jostled around a bit. The drummer complained bitterly to the bartender, but the old boy just glared right back at him and demanded, "Just what the heck you doing in here afoot, anyhow?" Another yarn of this nature concerns a tenderfoot who stopped in at a western saloon where a card game was in progress among a group of cowboys who were passing around a jug while they played. The tenderfoot stopped and watched the game for a while, then drifted on to the bar where he ordered a drink. It was about that time that one of the cowboys, who was an epileptic, went off into one of his fits. When the excitement had died down, the stranger started out without drinking his drink. The bartender, who seldom saw a drink go unfinished, demanded to know what was wrong with it. "I ain't going to drink it," the newcomer said. "If that's the kind of whiskey you serve, I don't want no part of it." There were times, too, when the cowboy himself was the pilgrim. Every so often a cowboy would accompany a trail drive or a cattle train to some city, and immediately he became the misfit to city ways. The story is told of the cowboy who checked into a big city hotel, paying $2.50 for his room. He finally conceded to pay such an outlandish price, but when the porter tried to lead him into an elevator, he balked. "No, sir," he said. "I ain't going to pay $2.50 for no little dinky room such as that." Jack Potter tells of the time that, as a young boy, he was on his way home from a trail drive and had a layover in Denver. "I followed the crowd down 16th and Curtis Street and rambled around looking for a quiet place to stop. I found the St. Charles Hotel and made arrangements to stay all night. Then I went off to a barber shop to get my hair cut and clean up a bit. When the barber finished with me, he asked if I wanted a bath, and when I said yes, a porter took me down the hallway and into the side room. He turned on the water, tossed me a couple of towels, and disappeared. I commenced undressing hurriedly, fearing the tub would fill up before I could get ready. The water was within a few inches of the top of the tub when I plunged in. Then I gave a yell like a Comanche Indian, for the water was boiling hot. I came out of the tub on all fours, but when I landed on the marble floor, it was so slick that I slipped and fell backwards with my head down. I scrambled around promiscuously and finally got my footing with a chair for a brace. I thought, 'Jack Potter, you are scalded after the fashion of a hog.' I caught a lock of my hair to see if it would slip, at the same time fanning myself with my big Stetson hat. I next examined my toenails, for they'd received a little more dipping than my hair, but I found them in fairly good shape, turning a bit dark, but still hanging on. That night I went to the Tabor Opera House and saw a fine play. There I found a cowboy chum, and we took in the sights until midnight, when I returned to the St. Charles. The porter showed me up to my room and turned on the gas. When he had gone, I undressed to go to bed, and stepped up to blow out the light. I blew and blew until I was out of breath, and then tried to fan the flame out with my hat, but I had to go to bed and leave the gas burning. It was fortunate that I did not succeed, for at that time the papers were full of accounts of people gassed just that way. And that was Pilgrims. Now we shall read next year's savings. And this quote is from the cowboy song, The Chisholm Trail. "When I got to the boss and tried to draw my roll, he had me figured out $9 in the hole." One of the more admirable characteristics of the cowboy was his attitude toward material wealth. Few cowboys ever owned much more than their horse, saddle, six-gun, and a change of clothing, and few of them ever really expected to have much more than that at any time in their lives. The early West was a poor man's home, and the primary reward of being a cowboy was the pleasure of living a cowboy's existence. Ramon F. Adams says of the cowboy, "Unlike us, to him money meant nothing. He would work hard for $30 a month, then spend it all with his characteristic free-heartedness in an hour of relaxation. All he was seriously concerned about was plenty to eat, a good horse to ride, a saddle for his throne, and he was king." This attitude was instrumental in the creation of what was known as the range code, which allowed ranch folks to trustingly leave their doors unlocked when away from home. It was an accepted custom for a cowboy to stop in an unattended ranch house, enter, and help himself to food. All that was expected of him was that he clean up his mess before he left. Cowboys often referred to their personal belongings as their trinkets or plunder. Agnes Morey Cleveland, in her book No Life for a Lady, tells of a cowboy who stopped at her ranch on his way to a local roundup. While he was eating, something stampeded his string of horses, and with them went the pack horse carrying his bedroll. The man leaped from his chair, shouting, "There goes the savings of a lifetime!" One cowboy was drinking at a bar when his boss came up and told him that he had been raised in pay an extra $10 a month.
"The heck," said the cowboy. "I haven't even drunk up last month's pay yet. That extra $10 will kill me for sure."
Another cowboy had been in town all weekend and was in the bunkhouse telling the boys about it.
"I went to town with $50, he said. "And now I ain't got one red cent of it."
"Gosh," someone said, "what did you do with all of it?"
"Well, first off, I moseyed into a saloon. I goes up to the bar and yells that I'll buy the drinks for the house. The house takes me up on it for $10 worth. Then I trots down to another saloon and do the same thing all over again. This time it costs $15. By now I was feeling my appetite stirring around, so I goes to a restaurant and orders me a $10 meal. So this morning I'm plumb broke."
"Yeah,
but 10 and 10 is 20, and 15 is only $35. What do you think you did with the rest of your $50?
The cowboy scratched his head thoughtfully.
"Darned if I know, boys. I must have spent that other $15 foolishly."
The cowman who started a brand called Percent had strong hopes of having his investment pay off. However, that was not the case, and with cattle country irony, he changed the brand to Double Zero. Walter Billingsley, a well-known Texas trail driver, likes to tell of the time he drove a herd of Texas beef to Wyoming for the King Ranch. Everything went along fine until they reached a trail town in Nebraska where they stopped for a short rest. Naturally, the boys wanted to clean up and take in the town. This was all fine and good, but five of them had enough of trail driving and did not report back for work. Billingsley rode to town the next morning, found the boys, and fired them on the spot. It was then that he realized he owed the man a considerable hunk of wages and did not have a red cent on him. He went to see the town's banker and explained that he was trail bossing a King's Ranch herd and that he wished to cash a check. But when the banker asked him for identification, Billingsley had none. The banker suggested that the trail boss look around town to see if he could find someone to identify him. The Texan looked but found no one he knew. Then an idea hit him, and he rode for camp. That afternoon, the banker heard a rumble of hoofs, and then someone called for him to come outside. It was Billingsley, and with him he had brought his entire remuda and the chuck wagon pulled by six mules. All of them carried the KW brand.
"I guess you know what the King Ranch brand is, don't you?" Billingsley said. "I reckon this ought to give you plenty of identification."
The banker agreed, and with a big grin, cashed a check for Billingsley. Con Price tells the story of old Dan Sullivan, who made a lot of money on a horse herd and retired from his cowboy life to open and manage a hotel in a cow town. Dan knew every puncher for miles around, and they knew him. During the winter months, when jobs were scarce, nearly a dozen waddies drifted in to spend the winter with him. Of course, they were dead broke, but Dan just couldn't bring himself to throw them out, even when they practically ate and drank him into bankruptcy. But even the generous soul of the cowboy could be overtouched. Jake Saunders was hit up by an old range dog for a loan of $20. Saunders knew that the man had a reputation for borrowing and gave him only $10.
"I asked for 20,
the man complained. That's all right, Jake answered. We're even. You've lost 10, and I've lost 10. Chronic borrowers were, in fact, none too popular on the range. Old Tom Muse was one, and the boys of his outfit had long since learned to control their generosity with him. One day, however, Tom went to sleep in the branding pen after working hours. As he slept, a calf came up, and tasting the crusted salt in his breeches, ate his pants almost completely off. Naturally, Tom had been too tight to bring along an extra pair, as the other cowboys had done, and he tried to borrow some from them, but not a one would help him out. Tom finally had to ride to town to buy a new pair, with his skinny old legs bare to the world. A cowboy who had a reputation like that of Tom was on roundup and asked the cook to get him some tobacco on his trip to town. He'd nothing less than a $20 bill, and he grudgingly handed over to the cookie. When the dough belly returned, the first thing the cowboy asked for was his change. Change? Said the cook. You didn't say nothing about change. I supposed you wanted to pay back what you've been a borrowin'. And he dumped out $20 worth of Duke's mixture at the cowboy's feet. It may seem strange that the cowboy should work long and hard for months, then throw his earnings away in one wild night of spending. Yet such a recklessness with his fortune was the cowboy's way. The feeling experienced on a trip to town is very well illustrated in J.L. McCallum's story of hitting Abilene, Kansas after a long trail drive. We went into town, tied our ponies, and the first place we visited was a saloon and dance hall. We ordered toddies like we had seen older men do, drank them down, for we were dry, very dry, as it had been a long way between drinks. I quit my partner, as he had a girl to talk to, so I went out, and in a very short time I went into another store and saloon. I got another toddy. My hat began to stiffen up, but I pushed it up in front, moved my pistol to where it would be handy, then sat down on a box in the saloon and picked up a newspaper, and I thought I'd read a few lines, but my two toddies were at war, so I could not very well understand what I read. I got up and left for more sights. I headed for a place across the street where I could hear a fiddle. It was a saloon, gambling, and dance hall. Here I saw an old, long-haired fella dealing monte. I went to the bar, called for a toddy, and as I was drinking it, a girl came up and put her little hand under my chin, looked me square in the face, and said, "Oh, you pretty Texas boy, give me a drink." I asked her what she wanted, and she said anything I took, so I called for two toddies. My, I was getting rich fast, a pretty girl and plenty of whiskey. My old hat was now away back on my head. My boss had given me $4 spending money, and I had my $5 bill, so I told the girl that she could make herself easy, that I was going to break the monte game, buy out the saloon, and keep her to run it for me when I went back to Texas for my other herd of cattle. Well, I went to the old long-haired dealer, and as he was making a new layout, I put my five on the first card, a king, and about the third pull, I won. I now had $10, and I thought I'd better go and get another toddy before I played again. As I was getting rich so fast, I put the two bills on the tray and won. I had now $20, so I moved my hat back as far as it'd go and went to get a drink, another toddy, but my girl was gone. I wanted to show her that I was not joking about buying out the saloon after I broke the bank. But after this drink, things did not look so good. I went back, and it seemed to me that I did not care whether I broke him or not. I soon lost all I had won and my original five. When I quit him, my hat was becoming more settled, getting more down in front, and I went out, found my partner, and left for camp. The next morning, in place of owning a saloon and going back to Texas after my other herds, I felt, Ah, what's the use? You old fellas know how I felt.
The West's love for gambling, the willingness to risk all on the turn of a card, found humorous expression in verse. 'Twas midnight in the faro bank, faces pale and cheeks aglow. A score of sports were gathered, watching fortunes ebb and flow. There was one who saw the last turn with eyes of deep dismay, and as the queen slipped from the box, cried, "Broke!" and turned away. For a moment on the table, down his throbbing head he laid, then looking round him wildly, he clenched his hand and said,
"I'm a pretty slick young feller. I've been given every deal, have often dropped my bankroll, but was never known to squeal. But this evening I'm weary, and my socks are hanging low. My usual gait is 213, but tonight I'm trotting slow. 'Tis not for myself I'm kicking. I've a friend that's near and dear, who's lying worn with sickness a couple of blocks from here. She's my darling, gents, my darling, but they say she's got a croak, and the medicine to save her I can't get. You see, I'm broke."
"Here's a dollar," said the dealer. A smile lit up his face.
"Thanks, old man. Damn the medicine. I'll play it on the ace."
A cowboy went into a mercantile store to buy some personal effects. When he'd rounded up what he wanted, he told the proprietor he would have to pay so much in cash and give him a slow note, meaning it would be some time before he could pay for the rest. When he had gone, the storekeeper scratched his head and wondered just how slow a slow note was. One cowboy, a man with a good deal of Scotch blood in his veins, supposedly went into a store and purchased a spur, only one. When asked why he didn't buy the spur for his other foot, the cowboy answered that he was under the impression that as long as one side of the horse moved, so would the other, and he could see no sense in wasting money by buying two spurs. In the Oklahoma Osage country, an Indian was said to have walked into a bank and asked for a sizable loan. The banker inquired as to what security the Indian had.
"Me got him 500 horses," replied the Indian. The banker checked on this and found it to be true, so he made the loan.
Some time later, the Indian returned to the bank with a huge roll of bills in his hand and paid off his note. The banker, noting how much the Indian had left, suggested to him that he let the bank take care of it for him. The Indian looked suspiciously at the banker.
"How many horses you got 'em?" he asked.
Not all cowboys were above their moments of greed, of course. Bank raids, train holdups, and stagecoach robberies were undertaken for more than just sport. Yet even the outlaws often felt a touch of the Robin Hood spirit. An outlaw was busy sticking up a train one afternoon when he came to an old fellow who shook his head and said,
"I'm sorry, but I've nothing to give you."
The outlaw looked at him suspiciously.
"How come? Who are you?"
"My name is Reverend Appleton. I am a Methodist minister."
The outlaw scratched the back of his neck with his six-gun, then dropped a big handful of coins into the minister's lap.
"Here," he said, "you take this. I'm a Methodist, too."
In similar vein, Curly Bill once attended church and forced the congregation to sing hymns for several hours. Then he passed the collection plate with a pistol in one hand and took up the largest amount in the history of the church. In fact, it was nothing particularly unusual for a gunman, after adding a notch or two to the butt of his gun, to attempt to square things by attending church and dropping a sack of gold dust into the collection plate. There's a story that Parson Tom Uzzle once preached in a gambling house in Creed. When the hat was passed, a good collection was taken, but it wasn't good enough to satisfy Bat Masterson. That night, some of the boys crept into the parson's hotel room and stole his breeches. When Parson Tom discovered his pants missing,
he stormed down into the saloon lobby in his long handles. Strangely, none of the boys seemed to know a thing about the parson's pants, so finally Tom enlisted the aid of the law and returned to his room. There, hanging on the foot of the bed, was the missing clothing. Only now, the pockets were jammed with currency and silver. Despite her moments of violence and greed, the Old West was an open-doored West which honored the values of hospitality and generosity and respected the honesty of men. The value of a man's personal integrity was fundamental in the makeup of the American cowboy. Nowhere is it more obvious than in the free-hearted, wholesome laughter of the range. And that was next year's savings. Thank you for joining us again for Western Short Stories. This is Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and winded day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged sky, and up the cloud he draw.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org, left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then, under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. You can also now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device. This has been Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.